Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now the second to last day of our series, Primarily New York, in advance of the New York primary tomorrow. Yes, it's on a Thursday, September 13th. Cynthia Nixon was here yesterday for a campaign interview. Both lieutenant governor candidates and all four attorney general candidates have come on for full half-hour interviews, including calls from some of you. But for the record, Governor Cuomo's campaign has strung us along with the possibility of his coming on, but he never scheduled an appearance. They even said that he might come on today, and it doesn't appear to be happening. So today, as it happens, a scandal is growing for the fifth day around a false and smearing Cuomo campaign mailer that made a fake news accusation about Nixon not caring about anti-Semitism that Cuomo has now renounced, but the flyer is out there. The New York Post has published what it calls a smoking gun email. I'm not sure that it really is, but the Post calls it a smoking gun email, which at least indicates that Cuomo might have known about and approved the flyer. Cuomo denies it, but won't name whoever else may have approved it. And there's another misleading mailer story, more indirectly involving Cuomo, in the New York Times today, that State Senator Jeff Klein, leader of the breakaway Democrats known as the IDC, who supported Republican control of the state Senate, that Klein is sending mailers showing Cuomo endorsing him. Cuomo has not endorsed Jeff Klein for re-election. Cuomo is staying out of that race. Klein's challenger in that Riverdale district, Alessandra Biaggi, has been endorsed by the Times and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and others from the progressive wing. The misleading Klein mailer also suggests Barack Obama has endorsed him, which Obama has not. And one more, our local news website, Gothamist, reports that Klein and four other senators who are in the breakaway IDC group have got a big last-minute campaign cash infusion from a pro-IDC group criticized by the state, even as Klein and the rest of them say the IDC doesn't exist anymore. So joining me now, Greg David, Crane's New York business columnist and head of the Business and Economics Reporting Program at the Craig Newmark CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. He also had a very in-depth assessment of Cuomo's time as governor in Crane's last week that's still on their website, called Cuomo's Journey, 8 years of promises kept, kicked down the road or left behind. And Jake Shore, who broke the news for Gothamist as a freelance reporter about the new IDC-related campaign funding for Jeff Klein and the four others. So hi, Greg. Hi, Jake.
Good morning.
Hey, Brian.
And Greg, forgive me for being self-referential as I was at the top, but every candidate for statewide office in the Democratic primary, except Cuomo, came on the show for interviews and call-ins. And my question is not how bad do you feel for Brian Lehrer Show listeners? It's, is that consistent with how he campaigns?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, not only did they string me along about whether I might or might not talk to the governor, it took weeks for me to have an interview with Melissa DeRosa, his top aide, which she had actually said she would do as early as May. And I had that interview 2 days before the story closed. Look, I've been covering Cuomo back a long way into his HUD days. You know what he used to do when he was at HUD?
What?
When you were working on a story about him at HUD, you'd get a phone call from somebody representing him that would want to, for this is in the print days, who would want to set up a call between me and Cuomo on Friday afternoon, which of course was minutes from closing. And the whole idea was he would call and put doubts in your mind so you'd actually have to pull the damn story. So I never took those phone calls on Friday. It's nothing new, Brian. Sorry.
And one of the things that he's done here, and I know on other broadcast outlets from time to time, is rather than schedule an interview that you can prepare for, his people will call in on the morning of, like as the show is starting. So the governor is available for a few minutes if you could take him. So that's, you know, one of the ways to make sure that he's got a little extra leg up in whatever level of information.
You know, and it just doesn't make any sense to me. He is And I spent a lot of time on this in reporting the story. He's knowledgeable about all these issues.
Yeah, masterful, usually.
He is a substantive governor. Yep. I mean, he leaves some of the policy stuff to the people around him. But he knows this stuff. I think, frankly, he knows a lot of this stuff better than the mayor knows his stuff, to use an example, and certainly more than a certain person in Washington knows. So he's perfectly capable of handling any questions you or I would throw at him if he wanted.
And I'll say, in fairness to him and his office, he did that calling in while the show was already in progress, more in his first term. In the second term, they more would give us a day's notice if he was interested in coming on. So that went in the right direction. But he didn't sit for a campaign interview this cycle. What can you tell us so far about the Cuomo campaign's fake news mailer smearing Nixon with being soft on anti-Semitism? The Cuomo campaign has retracted it, but Cuomo denies advanced knowledge of it. The Post, though, says it has what it calls a smoking gun email from last Friday from the Cuomo campaign pitching a story to the Post based on the mailer. Could Cuomo not have known?
Well, I don't think so. As a matter of fact, you know, there's this that's one example. Then we have this whole thing with the Tappan Zee Bridge and whether the contractor was ordered to get it opened before the primary so they could have the event that they had. The idea that this micromanager doesn't know things that are going on in the campaign is just hard to believe. I mean, as you pointed out, we don't have firm evidence yet. But that he doesn't know virtually everything that's going on is just hard to believe. That's not the way we understand how he works.
And if Cuomo hasn't apologized, which he hasn't, or identified those from his campaign who are responsible by name, there's a phrase that they're using, a person who, sorry, I should have had this in front of me, but a person who does constituent outreach created that fake news mailer. Why wouldn't they say who?
I'm just speculating here, but because to the extent they identify the person could be likely to tell what they know. You know, there's this little thing in the Tappan Zee Bridge where the person they put out to be interviewed on the subject wouldn't say whether she'd been contacted by the governor's office and then had to issue a statement a couple hours later saying she had not been contacted by the governor's office. Well, isn't that a series? That all sounds a little suspicious to me.
Ads on TV end with, "I'm Andrew Cuomo, and I approve this message," or whoever the candidate is in whatever ad. I don't know how mailers work and if it has to say somebody approved this message.
I guess not.
So maybe not. All right. We are leaving poor Jake Shore to the side here. Jake, who's a freelance journalist who contributed a story about IDC-related state Senate campaign funding at the last minute, which also raises some questions. So we're going to pivot to that story. Greg David from Cranes is going to stay with us. The phones are open on anything on the day before the New York primary. Electioneering can now begin, folks. And question time is always on. So anything you want to say or ask about any of these races, governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, state senate, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Jake, your headline, ex-IDC members enjoy big fundraising boost from group criticized by the state. What is this group criticized by the state?
Hey, Brian, just first thing, I'm a huge fan of your show. Second, that committee roundly criticized by the state was actually, it was a committee that was registered for the Independence Party, a third party in the state, and it was registered back in 2016. But it actually was not chaired by a member of the Independence Party for some time. So from 2016 to 2018, when the IDC disbanded, that committee was actually led by Jeff Klein, the leader of the IDC. And then so during that time, almost $1.4 million in donations were fielded through that committee to members of the IDC. And that's what the state Supreme Court in June actually ended up ruling to be illegal, those donations, because it was being donated to the IDC but it was being led by a member of the IDC, a sitting lawmaker, contributing a group of sitting lawmakers, and not by the Independence Party. And then after that ruling, the committee went quiet for a while. And then in this last week of filings, before the last filing before the election, it was shown that $345,000 went to five former IDC members who are all facing tough re-elections in their districts because of the anti-IDC backlash that's happening in these elections.
So who's getting how much money from them now?
Mm-hmm. So in the I'm not remembering the smaller numbers, but the Jeff Klein got $100,000 in that latest filing, and Marisol Alcantara, who's facing Robert Jackson in District 21, I believe, got 120.
Yeah, 31.
31 got in
Upper
in
Manhattan
district,
and West Side.
Mm-hmm. And she got $125,000 in that last filing.
Supposedly, the IDC doesn't exist anymore, and Jeff Klein and the others are going to support the other Democrats now, not the Republicans, for control of the Senate if they get reelected. Is this cash infusion only to these IDC-related candidates an indication that on some level the IDC does still exist?
Mm-hmm. I guess you could say that. I mean, they're... The committee only donated really to those candidates, and their largest donations were to those candidates, and they have been through some time. And when it was first established, that committee back in 2016, it was a means for the Independence Party to give those donations to the IDC, but it wasn't chaired by anybody in the Independence Party until this year. And there are some questions still about conflict of interest. I mean, in that latest filing, the Senate Independence Campaign Committee got $50,000 from the Real Estate Board of New York, the lobbying arm for real estate in the state. So you could make that argument. And definitely Jeff Klein and Marisol Alcantara got the sizable contributions, and they have no requirement. They haven't really returned any of that $1.4 million that was ruled to be improperly fundraised from the period of 2016 to 2018.
Greg David, you want to weigh in on any of this?
Yes, well, I think here's how you can understand how important this is. And when you brought up the real estate contribution, I think that's why it's important. You know, when I was reporting the story, people told me a Democratic-controlled Senate would be different this time. Melissa DeRosa told me that.
The governor
Stuart Applebaum
uh-huh.
of the retail workers told me that. Uh-huh. But if the progressive candidates who are challenging the IDC members win, that will fundamentally alter the political orientation of those Senate Democrats. And that's why it's really important. And also, there's lots of other money that's being thrown into these races that's important. Real estate groups have mobilized almost $1 million in various ways to oppose Zephyr Teachout in a desperate effort, I think, to keep her from winning.
Who are they supporting?
They're mostly supporting Maloney. I think they wouldn't mind Letitia James either. And so there's really last-minute efforts on several fronts, which is all about, I think, the ideology of state leaders after the November election.
And Jake, before you go, have you covered Klein's opponent, Alessandra Biaggi, enough to know what her funding base is, even as Jeff Klein, through these various sources that we've been talking about and others, tremendously outraises and outspends her?
Mm-hmm. I actually interviewed her before the Gillibrand endorsement, before kind of anybody really knew who she was. And I just reached out to her on a whim and just about her candidacy. And I'm not sure if she's made the same pledges that other anti-IDC candidates have about keeping real estate money out of fundraising. But that was one of her central critiques of Klein, that he was beholden to real estate. I'd heard the first IDC criticisms about stymieing important legislation in the state Senate that would provide for a lot of progressive items that they're being accused of, and so I'm not sure totally about the fundraising, but I mean, she's roundly criticized Klein for that and for being beholden to other interests outside of the district.
All right. One of the things to watch for tomorrow is how this Jeff Klein versus his challenger, Alessandra Biaggi, race turns out in Riverdale and a little bit of Westchester. And Jake Shore, a freelancer who contributed this reporting to our local news website, Gothamist, thanks for giving us a few minutes.
Thanks, Brian.
And we continue with Greg David, Crane's New York business columnist and director of the Business and Economics Reporting Program at the Craig Newmark CUNY Graduate School. This school has too many names.
You can shorten it. We're going to call it the Newmark School of Journalism. And then if you want to add at CUNY, you can leave the Craig off.
Alexa in Forest Hills. You're on WNYC. Hello, Alexa.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I had two things to add. I was very upset about the Democratic Party mailer that your guest was speaking about earlier. I think it's really despicable that the state party used funds to smear one of its own candidates. And I agree that there's no way Cuomo, who is a micromanager, like your guest also stated, that he didn't know about it. The state leader also has deflected blame, and I just want to make sure that something is done so that someone is held accountable to such, you know, a really awful mailer that arrived, you know, just a couple of days before Rosh Hashanah and capitalized on real growing fear around anti-Semitism in the Jewish community. The New York Times did endorse Cuomo and then covered the mailer and called it the lowest form of politics. And I, along with members of the Jewish Vote, who, you know, really call upon the New York Times to rescind their endorsement. I also wanted to just state that in Brooklyn and Queens for this Democratic primary, there's county committee elections. County committee is the lowest level, or the most local level, I should say, of the party. Each electoral district, which in New York State is, you know, a couple of blocks to a few blocks, has two members of the county committee that are either elected or appointed. And in Queens, where I live, there has been, you know, a little bit of a shift of party leadership with Crowley's loss in June to Ocasio-Cortez. Crowley, as we know, is the chairman of the county Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. So there has been a real rise in local community members mm-hmm. that are running for county committee. So they'll be on the ballot. There are some primaries. The Queens County Committee, as covered in the New York Times, has been running people, some of which don't even know that they're running for these positions, against right. people who took steps to be on the ballot. Right. And I'm one of them who's running for county
uh-huh,
committee.
So. A little electioneering by Alexa in Forest Hills.
You said it would be okay.
I did say. Alexa, I'm going to leave it there, and I do appreciate your call. Thank you very much for all of that. Greg?
You know, we've been talking about the last-minute machinations of the campaign. But I think we should step back and ask why Andrew Cuomo is coasting to renomination this time.
The
Siena
right.
poll showed that he was up 10 points over a poll. 10 more points. He's got a 40-something lead. And I think the answer is you have to remember what he's done over 8 years. New York was completely dysfunctional when he ran in 2010. Budget was adopted 125 days late. Spending was out of control. He fixed those problems. He was the first governor who actually fixed the Medicaid program in the state, reducing per recipient spending while covering more people, solved his fundamental budget issue. He has kept the budget under control. New York has been, within reason, fiscally responsible. In political terms, when he decided to move in a progressive way, he moved decisively. New York, on economic terms, is the most progressive state in the country if we measure it by minimum wage. We have the most robust healthcare safety net around. And those are two very significant accomplishments. Now, not everything is so good. He spent billions. Oh, and we should say infrastructure is mostly in his plus column. He's produced a lot of infrastructure projects that are making a difference. He has failed on the MTA. And by the way, he hasn't told us how he's paying for some of those infrastructure projects. In my view, they're two enormous failures. He spent billions of dollars on economic development with virtually no return for it.
Especially in Western New York.
Especially in Western New York. They get very upset when people say that, but I think it's true. And he launched his campaign in April of 2010 at the Tweed Courthouse, promising to end end corruption in New York. And that is his biggest failure. Because given the five, given there were six people convicted so far just this year, from Shelley Silver to Dean Skelos to his former most important aide to the person who ran a key part of the economic development program, he has fundamentally failed on that issue.
Go ahead.
No, but that is his record. And I think most New Yorkers say we're better off. And then politically, of course, this is the great flaw in the Nixon campaign. And that is that he has very carefully positioned himself as the anti-Trump candidate. And when progressives go to the polls, when people go to the polls tomorrow to cast a vote against Trump, it's hard to see how they don't think Cuomo is the person they vote for in that
because they've got a gazillion dollars of TV ads running saying Cuomo is the person to fight Trump and never mention that he's not running against Trump. He's running against Cynthia Nixon.
Right. Although he does. He's also done some things on this subject, too. But that's the, you know, that's, I think, her biggest problem, in that voting for her is not necessarily seen as a vote against Trump. Voting for Cuomo is seen as a vote against Trump. He's been masterful on the politics of that.
John in Westbury, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, Brian. I think we should stop splitting the votes. Like, I have a lot of friends who in 2016 voted for Bernie Sanders, and then now they're complaining about Trump. So I'm like, what are you complaining for? So it's like
you mean they diluted the Democratic vote and turned people off to Hillary Clinton, which contributed to Trump's election, and you don't want people doing the same thing by getting all excited about Cynthia Nixon?
Yeah, I mean, I think she's a great candidate, don't get me wrong, but I don't think she can win, you know, the governor's mansion over, you know, over the Republicans. We have to elect people who can win. You know, we have to stop splitting these tickets into thinking that we can elect people, but they can't even pull through. And that's all I'm, going to say.
Thank you very much. Now, presumably in New York State, Cynthia Nixon would be extremely competitive against the Republican candidate if she gets the nomination.
I can't look. I think that no Republican is going to win. No Republican has won statewide office in New York in more than a decade, and no Republican's going to win statewide office this year in New York. I also personally, I think the Democrats are going to take control of the state Senate. And what's very interesting is trying to figure out if the Democrats are going to win some of those key congressional seats that are up.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We have just a few minutes left with Greg David from Cranes and the Craig Newmark CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. I just want to focus on one other thing that you brought up from your article, and listeners, I recommend you to Crane's website, where they've taken this exhaustive assessment of Cuomo's two terms of governor outside their paywall by Greg David, and you can read it for free. The MTA, the most damning paragraph to me in your article on a policy level, and you write about ethics and other things, and you have a lot of praise in there as well, just to say. But on the MTA, quote, Cuomo's MTA, as Cynthia Nixon is calling it, the governor allowed the MTA, you write, to continue a 2010 plan that reduced inspections and maintenance to save money, and a capital program that purchased fewer cars than needed to replace those reaching the end of their use. Some MTA funding budgeted for unglamorous work that keeps trains running was diverted to the governor's pet projects, including the Long Island Railroad third track, cashless tolling, and largely cosmetic subway station upgrades. So you're really saying that Cuomo made some conscious choices to let maintenance wither so he could make some shiny objects for the public to give him credit for.
I agree. As a matter of fact, so I had this conversation with Larry Schwartz, who used to be his top aide and is now on the MTA board. And he got very angry in our interview. And he said to me, when I said to him, Cuomo has been in office for 8 years. Isn't he responsible for what's happened to the MTA, because the governor controls the MTA. He said to me, no, that's ridiculous. As soon as the governor found out about it, he acted. So if that's true, that meant for 6.5 years, Andrew Cuomo paid no attention to the MTA. So I don't think Schwartz is telling the truth in that regard. But even if he is, it's a dereliction of duty. The MTA's decline is on Cuomo. And remember, the other part that we're stuck in is Cuomo saying the city has to pay half of whatever we need to fix the problem. Well, the city might be a good idea, but historically that is not, over the last 30 years, the way the MTA has been funded. It has been a state responsibility. If he wants to change it, I think he needs to tell us why and how and the implications of it.
We have Richard Hake standing by with the news, but just to finish, a couple of thoughts on this day before the primary. The governor race has Cuomo over Nixon by 40 points, as you said, in that Siena poll. Take polls as you will with a grain of salt, folks, but it's a 40-point lead in that poll. And the contrast is with their running mates, Kathy Hochul with Cuomo and Jumaane Williams with Nixon. You can vote separately for governor and lieutenant governor. Listeners, if you're voting in the New York Democratic primary tomorrow, you should know that that's an option to you, to vote separately for governor and lieutenant governor. And the Jumaane Williams, Kathy Hochul race for lieutenant governor is about tied. How is it possible for it to be so different from the top of the ticket?
Well, this is because of the way Cuomo runs thing. Whoever has seen Kathy Hochul over the last 4 years? I mean, it's all Cuomo all the time. So they have this person from Western New York that no one knows. In a primary, the votes are all downstate. Williams has some name recognition from his time in the city council. That would be an amazing result, because there's no doubt that Williams would be a very different governor than Cuomo if anything happened over the next 4 years.
A more progressive wing governor, more like Cynthia Nixon, if that's fair to say.
True, and with much less experience, too.
And the four-way attorney general primary, just briefly, Letitia James, Zephyr Teachout, Sean Patrick Maloney, and Licia Eve. It was supposed to be, at the beginning of this race, I thought, a two-person showdown between the Nixon wing, Bernie Sanders wing, Teachout, and the Cuomo wing and unions wing, James. But here comes Mr. Maloney with a slight lead in the Siena poll. What gives?
His money. If he took it, he took the money out of his congressional campaign, and he has poured it. I don't know about you, but I'm seeing mostly Maloney ads on the TV. Now, we don't know, his base is in the Hudson Valley, might do well upstate, doesn't have a clear shot because Teachout has won the important endorsements.
New York Times, Daily News, Buffalo News.
And is the real person the progressives want to elect. So, I mean, I read a long piece yesterday about how you could parse the polls. I don't know what to make of it, except this is the kind of race where the pollsters can't get it right, and we have no idea what will happen tomorrow.
Does this risk being like the famous U.S. Senate primary? I'm going to pull a historical reference out of my hat here. Do you remember the famous U.S. Senate primary in 1992, which was supposed to be the year of the woman in New York state politics, Liz Holtzman versus Geraldine Ferraro, but they split the woman's vote and Robert Abrams got the nomination.
And, well, yes, I do remember that. And Abrams went on to win, right? And he was
for U.S. Senate.
And oh, yes, and then he was
defeated by Al D'Amato, right. The incumbent.
We needed Chuck Schumer to get rid of Al D'Amato.
6 years later. So, all right, Greg, David, Crane's New York business columnist and business and economics reporting program director at the Craig Newmark CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.